Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Winter is coming. When that was said to the characters in Game of Thrones, it was meant as a warning and filled some of them with dread. In our world, it should serve as a warning to gardeners. They don't have to fear the White Walkers, but they should know what they need to do to get ready for the cold weather and to prepare their gardens for spring. And that is what we're going to spend time on this hour. We've enlisted the help of three experts. Aaron Hostetler is a local gardener and owner of The Patio Farmer, who specializes in edible plants and home food growing in small spaces. Cherie Jazar is a local gardener, farmer, and owner of Deep Roots CPS Farm, which grows fruits and vegetables and is involved in beekeeping and raising goats and hens and other chickens. Are there other chickens? And Mary Roberts is also here. She owns Windcrest Farms in Monroe. That's a 14-acre facility with greenhouses just about 30 miles south of Uptown Charlotte. Welcome back to you all. Good to see you again. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Aaron, I'm going to start with you. This area used to be, at least this is my impression. Correct me if I'm wrong. This area used to be colder in the winter than it seems to be today. We could always count on a couple of measurable snowfalls. The leaves would turn in. I have a maple tree out front. It used to be brilliantly yellow by October the 15th. The leaves are still green this year. They were last year and the year before. They don't turn until mid-November now. How has climate change, which is what this clearly is, impacted gardeners and what they can do and when they should do it?
Wow. Yeah, that's a great question to start off with. So at the end of last year, the USDA put out a new hardiness zone map. So this is something that the USDA maintains, and it's basically a map of the entire country broken into different hardiness zones or agricultural zones. So the Charlotte region used to span two zones, actually, 7B and 8A. And the lower the number, the colder your winters tend to be. So further north, you know, at the border with Canada, it could be like a 2 or 3 or 4. And then further south in Florida, you can get to 9, 10. So the lower the number, the colder the climate. And then there's some nuance with the letters as well. But we used to be 7B/8A. And then with the new map that was released last year, we are officially all 8A. So it, you know, that kind of is really in your face that we are warming and it has an impact. So the impact for us is that we can start planting our seasonal annual vegetables slightly earlier. So this year, for example, I started planting my spring vegetables in February, whereas the year before I might have done early March. And then for fall, I started planting in August this year, where usually I do September.
Cherie, I'm sure that this has affected you in exactly the same way. Would I be wrong or right about that?
You're right. Just like Aaron was describing, you know, the frost is set to come probably early November, and some of our garlic planting that we do, we have sort of postponed that. We usually start very early in October, but we've postponed that. So yeah, the warming weather has had a huge impact on gardeners and farmers alike, as you can see.
Yeah.
With what happened with Hurricane Helene and our farmer friends in Western Carolina having lost a lot of things, crops and livestock from that tragic event.
Has this ever happened before, where the Farmer's Almanac or the Geological Survey, whoever does the map that you were talking about a second ago, Aaron, that rates areas in terms of agricultural zones, has it ever happened before that they've changed the zone and made it warmer than it used to be?
That's a great question. I am not 100% sure, but I do know that the USDA hardiness zone map is updated. I want to say the last time it was updated was 2013. It might be every 10 years. Don't quote me on that. That they update it, but it works off of an average of wintertime lows.
So, Mary, Cherie just mentioned garlic, and I was going to talk about garlic for a second because in looking yesterday through the Farmer's Almanac, we are allegedly beyond the fall planting dates for a lot of things, except for garlic, which they say you can plant from seed, they say, between November 12th and November 26th. Any other plants that you can put in the ground or their seeds in the ground at this point in time? Or should you be waiting? And has the change in climate affected any of that in your mind?
Fall is a great time to put in our perennial fruit plants. So, if you want to establish your home orchard, you want to put in blueberries, any of the fruit trees like apples, pears, strawberries. Right now, we've got lots of strawberries ready to go into the ground. And the reason we want to do that is the ground is still warm. These plants can get established underground without the stress of the heat of the summer. And then in the spring, we can get an early harvest. The tops leaf out. If you think about strawberry picking, if you've ever gone strawberry picking, that's in May. So if we get our plants established in the fall, they can produce for us in the early spring. If we wait until the spring to plant perennial fruits, we've got to wait an entire year for them typically to produce. So this is a great time to get out and establish your home orchard.
So if things are warming up, the things that you could have should have done, say in September, you can now do in October. You can put it off another month because it's still warm enough to put things in the ground.
If I could predict the weather, I would be a rich woman. And the thing is that right now it's changing so much. So for instance, we had a cold snap, which and I say it was a snap because typically when it gets cold, it stays cold. It didn't this year. So, we ran around, took all of our tender plants into the greenhouse because we had that few nights of cold. And now here it is in the 50s in the evening. And so we're opening windows, turning on fans again. So it's you just have to watch the weather. There are trends, but there's the 10-day forecast is how we operate.
And of course, climate and weather affects all living things, not just plants. Humans, it affects them. We have to wear jackets or not jackets, whatever. It also affects the beneficial and not so beneficial bugs. And Genevieve emails us this: I have a raised garden in my backyard, raised garden beds in my backyard. This year, I was inundated with squash bugs and now stink bugs. Is there anything that I can do organically to prevent these bugs from recurring in the mass quantities that I had this year, next year? I'm sure they've laid eggs in my garden bed, so I'm sure there are larvae growing in the beds. Can I kill the larvae somehow organically? I don't know which one of you to ask that question of.
I'll take it.
Okay.
Organically, we use a material called diatomaceous earth, which is a really long word that nobody can get the first time till you get the rhythm of it, but it's called DE. And basically, it is a mined mineral from ancient seabeds. And if you looked at it under a microscope, it looked like tiny little razors. And this is actually there's a food grade that you can feed to animals as a to deal with parasites. But by sprinkling it over the garden, when any soft-bodied insect like this larva crosses over it, it punctures the larva and they dehydrate. So it's a mechanical action, not a chemical action. And the bonus of using this product is it's very high in silica. And silica creates strong cell walls in our stems and our leaves. So it's actually fertilizing or becoming a soil amendment, as well as something that deters pests. So when you're looking for diatomaceous earth or DE, it's very important to look for a food grade because it comes in all different kinds of grades. For instance, they'll use diatomaceous earth in pool filters to filter out algae. It's a totally different grade. But anything that we want to use in our gardens, if we make sure that it's food grade, because we're treating the food that we're going to eat.
Genevieve has the magic touch because she got in without even knowing what the email address is. I don't know how she did that, but let me give it out. For those of you who are listening, you might have a question of your own. It's charlottetalks@wfae.org. That's how you can get to us. Erin, you specialize in container gardening with everything from pots to these raised beds that Genevieve has in her backyard. So when it comes to pots, do you recommend continuing to plant and grow things over the winter by bringing those pots and containers indoors?
I think it depends on what you're growing. Most of our edible plants that are seasonally appropriate for fall, so your leafy greens, your root vegetables, any herbs except for basil, and dill can even be sensitive, are fine to grow outside even with freezing temperatures. The bigger the pot you have to use, the better off your plants will be, the more resilient they'll be to fluctuations in temperature, the more moisture they'll have available to them, which helps to strengthen their cell walls. The only plants that I would strongly encourage bringing indoors for the winter would be any citrus or tropical fruit plants that you might have growing at home. Even though we are warming, we are not warm enough for those to live outside in the winter.
We're going to get into all things you should do, you should not do, things to do now, things to do later as we go through this program for getting your garden ready for winter and for spring in later months. Coming up on this program, Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Cherie, how do you put your garden to bed in the winter? I mean, do you really need to do anything to prepare for winter if things have to sit outside besides letting it go fallow? Should you be enriching the soil? What should you be doing, if anything?
We do a number of things. We plant in areas that we want to rest. We plant a cover crop early on in the fall to sort of re-enrich the soil, to amend the soil, and to protect the soil. That's very important. We also overwinter some vegetables like root carrots. We basically plant some carrots and just let them be storage carrots in the ground.
What does that mean, storage carrots in the ground?
So, carrots are root vegetables, right? And they really like cold weather. Certain varieties of carrots do. And plant your crop of carrots, and as you need to harvest them, you can just go out and harvest them. You don't have to harvest all at once. And once it gets, the temperature drops very low, the sun does not shine as frequent as it does during the warmer months, photosynthesis sort of slows down on the plants. And so the growth of the plant, it's not what it would be in spring and summer. And so it's sort of not necessarily lays dormant, but it slows in growth, and you can keep that crop in the ground longer than you would during the spring and summer. And carrots are a thing that we overwinter. We also have learned to overwinter some spinaches as well.
Cherie Jazar is a local gardener. She owns Deep Roots CPS Farm. She's here with Erin Hostetler, owner of The Patio Farmer, and Mary Roberts, owners of Windcrest Farms in Monroe. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Erin Hostetler is with us. She's a local gardener, owner of The Patio Farmer. Cherie Jazar is a local gardener and owner of Deep Roots CPS Farm. And Mary Roberts owns Windcrest Farms in Monroe. So Mary, turning back to the Farmer's Almanac, which knows everything, they say that in this area you can start planting things like celery mid-January, bell peppers in late January, broccoli, arugula, cabbage in early February, things like basil, bok choy, Brussels sprouts, although I don't know why you want to plant Brussels sprouts in late February, all from seed and also indoors. Would you suggest doing that? Would you suggest people wait, put themselves on a different timetable for those things? What would you suggest?
Well, we do all of those things, but we're in a greenhouse. We're in a heated greenhouse. So when you come to put, when you're ready to put those peppers and tomatoes and things in the ground and you want to buy an established plant, those were in fact started in January and February. You can't seed things like bell peppers in January and February. It's just too cold. So it's good to read the fine print there and say, well, is it indoors or is it outdoors? We encourage seed starting. We have classes here at the farm to teach people how to seed start. And you get a lot more varieties available to you when you're starting your plants from seed, but it also takes a little bit of infrastructure and timing in order to be successful for that. So folks that come to our classes walk away with some, what we feel are some essential life skills. And then other people's walk away and go, yeah, we'll let you start them and I'll just come and buy them when they're ready to go into the garden.
Aaron, the Almanac also insists starting plants from seed indoors can give your crops a head start on the growing season, but that not all vegetables should be started indoors. Do you agree with that? And if so, which are the plants that you would recommend for both of those situations?
Yeah, so I would agree with that. I am obsessed with seeds. I love seeds so much. And I love direct seeding them or planting them directly outside where they're going to grow and thrive and produce as often as possible. There are some exceptions there. I think if you want to be growing tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, even broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, from seed, then it is best to start those inside, in my opinion. It's not impossible to start them directly outside, but to Mary's point, it can just take a long time, and things like tomatoes, peppers, and eggplant are better suited to start inside. Most everything else, I love throwing seed directly in the soil.
Cherie, last week it was reported that native plant supplier Carolina Native Nursery in Western North Carolina lost 90% of their inventory because of the hurricane, which also caused significant damage to its infrastructure. And that's just one supplier of plants from nurseries. Others scattered throughout the western part of the state sustained damage and have been closed until further notice in many cases. Do you anticipate a shortage of new plants in the spring because of the be they vegetable plants or flowering plants because they were damaged, or these warehouses, these greenhouses rather, were damaged in this storm?
Well, I know many of them are starting to recover right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's early enough. We can definitively say there will be a shortage, but we will feel the pressures of what happened. Gratefully, we have local suppliers like Mary who can provide those organic seedling starts here in our community. But, there have been some significant, losses across the Western Carolina region.
I guess the question I'm asking, what will that do when you go to these big box stores or you go to your favorite local place that's not a big box store to get your plants this spring? Are you going to find shortages? Are you going to find the prices substantially higher because of all of this?
Well, Mary's got her hand up. one of the things is, I'm a farmer, and we do a lot of our own seedlings. Okay. We do direct doing direct sowing as well, and we start our crop in January. So we're not necessarily buying from big box stores. So maybe Mary can answer.
Okay, this. Mary, go ahead.
Well, you know, this is a plug for what we do. I mean, that's what we do. We raise locally produced transplants. But in the question of the big box stores, a lot of the plants that are coming into big box stores are coming from well outside of our region. And so you may not see shortages. However, you're not supporting the local folks that grow plants either. And those plants coming in weren't necessarily raised in our climate conditions. And it's not necessarily supporting the local economy. There are several producers in this region outside of the North Carolina mountains that you can be supporting to supply fruit, native plants, ornamentals, and in our case, edibles.
And Mary, I think it was Cherie that mentioned a little while ago that now's a good time to start putting in ground covers to help amend your soil and things like that. So that leads to the question, what should you be doing? What should you not be doing right now to get your planting areas ready for spring? Should you clean up or should you just let the dead vegetation stay there, let it winter there? What should you do?
Well, we're a big fan of cover crops also because it's something that's living, nourishing not only what's in the soil, but it's early food for our pollinators in the spring. Right now, our two cover crops that we're planting are crimson clover, which fixes nitrogen in the soil, and winter rye, which is a grain. It's wonderful because it greens up very quickly, so you've got a little bit of green in the landscape. But it also breaks up hard soils. And again, both of those are going to flower very early in the spring and benefit our pollinators. As far as what don't do, not a big fan of leaf blowing or leaf raking. We're going to leave those leaves to decompose and nourish the soil, or again, as a home for beneficial insects. Now, if you've had a pest pressure or a disease pressure in the garden, it's good to remove all of that residue so it doesn't overwinter. But then again, when you remove that, plant a cover crop so that soil is not bare and can wash away or blow away or just sprout a great crop of root weeds early in the spring. If something's already there, the weeds are suppressed.
Cherie, she just mentioned leaves, and for leaving the leaves might horrify neatniks everywhere, or lazy people like me. That's wonderful news. Just leave them where they are. Most people feel guilty if they don't rake up the leaves or blow them into piles and put them into bags and set them out by the curb. But these leaves, I am told, can help fight climate change because they become natural mulch. They keep in moisture. So if you have leaves in your yard, are you guys recommending that we rake them off the lawn and rake them into our flower bed, Cherie? Is that what you're recommending?
Absolutely. Yeah, leaves are organic matter that feeds the soil. It creates an ecosystem for those beneficial fungi and bacteria and earthworms. It's a natural mulch. And, you know, I don't know why you would bag them and take them away. You want to leave them. You want to leave them. It can even create a warmer soil condition so that in the spring when you start your planting, your soil could be a little warm from just all of the activity that the leaves have. I usually plant my bulb flowers, like my tulips, my daffodils, and I put a thick layer of leaves on top so that in the spring, when that early warm comes, those blooming flowers will just look beautiful. So maybe that's a way to sort of disguise it. You just got to wait a little while.
Oh, so many questions. But before I ask them, Erin wants to get into this. Go ahead, Erin.
Yeah, leaves are also great to collect if you are composting at home. So leaves are a great source of browns. So if you have learned about composting, you know that there are browns and there are greens. Greens are fresh things that come out of your kitchen that you're looking to turn into, you know, delicious, rich compost to then feed your soil. And then leaves are a great source of brown or things that are high in carbon and help the breakdown process in your compost pile. So adding leaves, you know, or any brown, could be cardboard, paper towel rolls, etc., at a ratio of about 1:1. So half browns, half greens, helps to keep your compost working efficiently, your compost pile working efficiently, and all of the bugs happy, the smells down.
Save your leaves. When you say paper towel rolls, are you talking about the little cardboard tube in the center of the roll?
Absolutely. Yes.
You put that outside? What do you tear it up into shreds, or do you just throw it out there?
Well, if you have a compost pile, you can just throw it directly in there. You can break it up. All if right. you break it up, it'll break down faster. So
getting back to the leaves here, because I have invested in a leaf blower. This is important to me. if you leave the leaves on your lawn, won't it kill the grass? I know you're gardeners. You probably don't care about grass, but I mean, won't it kill the grass?
It's all going to depend on how thick those leaves really are. We like to get them as deep as possible for all the reasons everybody has mentioned, you know, soil amendment, mulching, keeping down the weeds and that kind of thing. And so if it really bothers you that it's on the lawn, and you can take that leaf blower and make the piles, but don't put them in plastic. I mean, that just to me is, now you're adding plastic to the environment and throwing away the good stuff.
In Charlotte, you can't bag your leaves in plastic anymore. You have to put them
very good. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you have to put them in paper bags or they won't pick them up. Cherie, go ahead.
So if you're concerned about just, you know, having leaves, you know, piled on your lawn, you can take your lawnmower and run across it and mulch it, breaking it down into tiny little pieces that you probably won't be able to tell that you have done that. And that's just a nice fertilization for your lawn. So don't just leave them flat if you're worried about the curb appeal. Just take your mower, go over, and it'll mulch it in.
So do we call you when the Homeowners Association complains? Is that what we should do? If you leave your leaves in the garden, does that increase the work that you have to do in the spring? Or do those leaves just break down? You leave them there once the plant, the growing season has begun. What do you do?
Actually, it makes your life much easier if you leave them in the garden in the spring, because over the winter, they are going to, it's like composting in place to a certain extent. It's going to, as the compost, it's going to nourish the soil, but it's already mulching your garden. We do a lot of no-till. We just keep mulching. And then in the spring, you just pull that mulch apart and plant directly in the soil. And I don't have to haul in mulch. My weeds are suppressed, and it actually makes your life a lot easier.
You just talked about tilling, and that was going to be one of my questions, Mary. Should some people suggest leaving your soil untilled in gardens, because all that does is disrupt the soil structure, it creates erosion, it kills the earthworms? Where do you stand on that?
We are no-till. Windcrest Farm is no-till. If we really need to suppress whatever's growing before we plant something in, we have tarps that we can put over the soil to kill anything underneath it, rather than running a tiller or, as you said, you know, breaking up the soil structure and decimating earthworms and all of that through tilling. So we are a no-till farm.
Let's talk about pruning for a second here, Cherie. Is now the time to prune? And if so, what do you prune? Talk about that for a second.
So fall is a great time to prune fruit trees. You can also prune any vines that are grape vines, berry vines, But you want to make sure all the leaves have fallen off of the trees and that that tree is dormant. And you'll know it once all the leaves are gone and little nodes start to form on the trees. Yes. Now is the time to prune in the fall rather than do it in the harshness of the summer or the or even early spring. But fall is the time to prune.
Do you prune azaleas? I'll hold that question in abeyance. I'm going to hold that question in abeyance. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. But the abeyance lasts only so long, so let's get to it. Azaleas, do you prune them now or do you wait till after they flower out in the spring?
So I don't have azaleas, and I am not sure when you would prune azaleas. Maybe Aaron or Mary may know that one.
Yeah, I'm definitely edibles, so I don't know about azaleas.
All right, well, let's talk about crepe murdering, because there's a lot of that going around. People come in and they chop these beautiful trees. These trees are, to me, are beautiful year round. They're not native. They shouldn't be here, but they are here and they're here in abundance. So let's treat them nicely. But people cut them down to the bare minimum. There's nothing left of them every year. Should you be doing that? Is there a better way to make these things stay in control and not go hog wild when the summer comes?
Again, I think you're talking to a group that focuses mainly on edibles rather than ornamentals.
All right.
And if we had ornamentals, just the lifestyle of the farmer and serious gardener, we're not pruning things that aren't giving us some food.
All right. The Washington Post, Aaron, recommends that if you're going to leave some of your containers or pots outside over the winter on your patio, your deck, wherever, that you can wrap these pots in burlap or blankets or even bubble wrap to keep the roots warm. Clearly, they're talking about plants that can continue to live outdoors during the cold months. So what's the purpose of the bubble wrap or the blanket? I only have 20 seconds. Does it really help that much?
I think it would help. I don't think we have to worry about that here in the Charlotte area. Okay. I think that's a tip for people further north.
Okay. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment with Aaron Hostetler, Cherie Jazar, and Mary Roberts in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org, listener supported. I'm Mike Collins here with Aaron Hostetler. She's a local gardener, owner of The Patio Farmer, who, by the way, says that any Charlotte HOA can call her about the benefits of leaves in the front yard. Cherie Jazar is also with us. She's a local gardener and owner of Deep Roots CPS Farm, and Mary Roberts owns Wildcrest Farms in Monroe. It's about 30 minutes from uptown Charlotte. The light changes in the fall and winter, and something else happens. Leaves fall off the trees, so a lot of shaded areas in your yard may suddenly be getting abundant sunshine, even though it's a shorter amount of sunshine during the day. That creates openings for light, and maybe where you have a pot on a deck or patio or someplace that's full of something that doesn't like a lot of sun, suddenly it's getting a lot of sun. So, Aaron, what's your recommendation? How do you rearrange things when there's more sunlight, more less canopy to cover to provide shade?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this comes up in consultations with clients of mine all the time, because, you know, you move into a house or you're in an apartment or a townhome, and you may not have a ton of control of the trees that are around you and the direction of sunlight you're receiving throughout the day. A lot of my clients will find that in the fall and winter, they have more sun than they do in the summer because of the trees. You know, they might have trees towards the south that are tall, but they're deciduous, and then they lose all of their leaves, and suddenly they have this abundance of sunlight in the cooler months of the year, which means that sometimes their fall vegetables and then spring vegetables, which are fairly similar in terms of what we can plant during those two seasons, do better than their summer vegetables because of the amount of sunlight that they're able to get when the trees or when the leaves fall from the trees.
I also understand that this is the time of year, fall, where you divide and transplant plants. What do you divide and transplant? I'm not sure which one of you to ask that question of either. Cherie, you look puzzled, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
And this may be referring to perennials. I know I do this a lot with perennials. You can, this is a really unique way of rearranging your garden. If you, for instance, want to, perennials are those things that come back every year. They don't necessarily, they can reseed, but they go dormant in the fall and winter, and they will come back bigger and better the year after. I like to sort of divide some of my perennials, like my herbs, to make more herb plants. I'll do this with my strawberry plants to produce runners so that the next season I'll have a bigger strawberry harvest. Sometimes I even do this in our asparagus patch where the roots are, you know, have gotten more, and so we'll sort of divide. So maybe that's the question, is okay, dividing those perennial plants that will come back to sort of rearrange your garden or create more plants for the next year.
Erin, did you want to jump in on this?
Just to piggyback on Cherie, if you are growing chives, garlic chives or regular chives, those are herbs, perennial herbs that divide super easily. They're super forgiving with the stress of pulling apart root systems. And chives, any member of the allium family, onions, chives, garlic, are great companion plants for having in and around your vegetables to help keep away deer and squirrels and bunnies and chipmunks, which we all know, you know, we strive for happy coexistence with those critters, but they are, you know, they can come in and munch on our plants. So if you have chives, you can divide them and fortify your raised beds, your wherever you're growing food.
It gets cold in the wintertime, water freezes. Let's talk about watering. If you've got things in the ground that you've put in the ground, and whether it's ground cover to as a placeholder for things that are going to come up in the spring, or whether you've actually planted things in advance of the spring, or you've planted things that are going to be beneficial in the fall and winter, how much should you water things, Mary, if things are outdoors? Because water freezes.
Yes, it does. And we have more of a complication with water in that we don't want to want it freezing in our irrigation systems and hoses and that kind of thing. And as far as how much you should water, it's just so individual. So for instance, someone up in Charlotte may have a red clay soil. We're here 7 miles from the South Carolina border. We have very sandy soil. So I would need to water much more with my sandy soil than folks with a clay-based soil would have to water. And then if you have been working with Erin in your container gardens, that is a whole different type of watering. So that's part of being educated as a gardener, is knowing your environment, knowing your soil type. Again, watching that weather, I'm not going to need to water if I've got rain in the forecast, and even if you've got your summer patterns down, water isn't going to evaporate in the winter like it does in the summer. So your watering schedules are going to be different with the colder weather, the shortening of the daylight than it was in the summer. So gardening is an active activity in all year round. Adjusting to the daylight, the heat, the soil textures, and all of that. So,
well, Erin, what about these potted plants? It's been my observation that you got to water potted plants all the time. I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe it leaks out of that little hole in the bottom. I don't know. But you got to do that a lot. What about the winter?
Yeah. So, like Mary was saying, in the winter, you don't have to water your potted plants nearly as often. In the summertime, you know, with our hot Charlotte summers, you're probably watering, you know, potted plants at least once a day. In the winter, you know, you can really kind of cut that back to every other day or maybe even every 2 days. But watering right before a frost is one of the best things that you can do. It helps the plant cell walls expand and become more resilient to the stress of those freezing temperatures. It also keeps the soil temperature a little higher. And, you know, when you're growing in pots, you're growing in a contained system that's above the ground. So there's not as much protection in and around those plant root systems. So watering is a great way of just helping to protect your plants from, you know, the cold fluctuations.
And,
in the winter.
Maybe that plays into this, Cherie, because I read yesterday that as temperatures drop and water begins to freeze, if you have a warm day, you should go out and soak the root balls of plants. Do you agree with that? And if so, why?
Well, we don't do that on our farm. You know, I one of the things that I think, you know, as a protector from frost that we do, and it could be easily done by many, is to put up row covers or agricultural fabric to protect your plants, especially if you have raised beds. It's just a cover that you don't want it necessarily touching the plant, but it's a cover that you put on top to protect it from frost. You can use water, but I think you need to have some level of like expertise on using water to protect it from frost. So the easiest thing to do would just be to cover your crop.
And Mary, I know you have an opinion on this.
I do. With what Cherie was saying, yes, those row covers we use all the time to protect the tops. But when you soak the root ball, the principle behind that is that water holds more heat than air does. So when you have watered the soil and you get that sunny day, you're actually creating a heat sink in the soil, and that's going to protect not only the roots from freezing, because again, that water is holding more heat than air, but at night, the soil will radiate heat. So it starts to give off that heat that has been stored during the day. And then if you cover, like Cherie has mentioned, you're capturing that heat that's radiating off of the soil. So doing those two things in conjunction can give you anywhere from a 2 to 5 degree protection. And if we're gardening with cold season crops like lettuce, kale, cauliflower, those kinds of things, so they like it cold. We just keep it just a little bit warmer to keep them thriving. So that's the science behind why water and before frost.
This is also the time of year, Cherie, when you remove bulbs and store them and plant others. Talk me through this.
So, you know, there are some blooming flowers that you want to, if you've had them, like we have dahlias on our farm that we plant. Some of them you want to remove them and sort of dry them out and store them to replant in the spring. But things, like I said, like tulips or daffodils, now is a good time to go ahead and plant them into your garden so that you'll have, you need to plant it before the first frost, really, before, you know, spring comes, so that they will be able to bloom beautifully in spring. So some bulb plants, depending on the variety in terms of the blooming flowers, you want to remove them if they've been in your garden. But you don't necessarily have to. I think we're going to have a warmer winter than we've had before. So if you do what we said before, leave those leaves, mulch, 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 some of those bulb blooming flowers will be okay.
It's often been said, Aaron, that if you're a gardener, there's always something to do. It doesn't matter what time of year it is or what the temperature is, there's always something to do. So, but this is a good time of year, it would seem to me, because maybe the active portion of gardening is not quite as strenuous as it is in the summertime, for you to plan what you'd like things to look like in the spring and summer. From somebody who works with raised beds and flower pots and things like that, potted plants, is now the time of year to get those areas ready? And if so, what do you do? What should you be doing right now?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the perfect time of year to either create a new space. So if you don't have raised beds and you want raised beds, this is a brilliant time of year to put in some new raised beds. Another plug for the leaves, you can use leaves to fill raised beds in the fall and help offset your initial soil budget for the spring. So fall is a great time of year for construction projects, as well as if you have a couple of seasons of growing under your belt, or maybe you want to reflect on how this year went for you. I love, the introspection that comes in the fall and winter, and just kind of reflecting on what went well, what changes you might want to make for the year ahead. And then of course, there's the seed catalogs that you can request, which is like, it's like early Christmas for all of us farmers and food growers. We love our seed catalogs, and there's so many different kinds, and you can spend hours just poring over the pages, trying to figure out what all you want to grow and all the fun new varieties.
We're talking about gardening and getting it ready for spring right now in the fall and the winter months ahead here on WFAE's Charlotte Talks. You people strike me as anarchists. You're telling us not to rake. You're telling us to rake leaves into our flower beds and things like that. And in conversations we've had in the past on this program about gardening, there are a lot of people who think we've just gone too neatnik in our world today. We want everything to be just so, as though the outdoors is our living room, as opposed to letting things grow wild, etc. I'd like to hear from all three of you about this. Talk to me about how we should approach nature in our yards.
Well, I think there's a middle ground between being a neatnik and an anarchist. I think that you should always leave some wild areas to support the biodiversity in your yard. You're creating habitats really for helpers for the garden. Now I have some areas of 14 acres that are organized because it makes harvesting more efficient. It makes planting more efficient. It makes my tools and my team more efficient. But I would say that the ultimate gardener, which is Mother Nature, has control of a majority of the farm. And it's also a learning area for me. So I can see how she's doing it. It's going to make my life a lot easier.
Anybody else want to chime in on that before we move on?
I was going to say, I don't see anything wrong with being a neatnik, right? Especially if it's your yard and we all have our eye of what we want our outside and inside to look like, and we can make it just that. I think as farmers or gardeners, we want to see local food, right? We want to see local food, and we want to see all the things that support local food. So we want people growing fruit trees and berry bushes and herbs and food. But I don't necessarily think I'm not a neatnik. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So.
I have less than a minute left, but I know, Cherie, that you can speak to bees, and bees are in trouble, and we need bees, because without bees to pollinate the food we don't eat. Are there plants that you can put in place in your yard to encourage or help the bees, but not make them become a nuisance? And I have 30 seconds.
Oh, wow. So, I think milkweed can help bring pollinators. I think any fruiting plants are good for bees, not just the honeybees, mason bees. There's native bees that just love blooming flowers.
So. And of course, carpenter bees love my deck. So They've already taken it over. They can have it. Aaron Hostetler from The Patio Farmer, Cherie Jazar from Deep Root CPS Farm, and Mary Roberts from Windcrest Farms. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.